these last days until where to be. Paradise life relaxing, black, Latino, and Anglo-Saxon. Armani exchange the range, cast, lost tribe of Shabazz, free at last, brand new whips to crash. Then we laugh in the iller path, the villa houses for the crew, how we do, trees for breakfast, dime sexes have been stretches. So many years of depression make me vision the better living, type of place to raise kids in. Open the eyes to the lies, history's told foul, but I'm as wise as the old owl, plus the gold child, seeing things like I was controlling, click rolling, tricking six digits on kicks and still holding, trips to Paris, I civilized every savage, give me one shot, I turn trife life to lavish, political prisoner set free, stress free, no work release, purple M3s and jet skis, feel the wind breeze in West Indies, I think Coretta Scott King, mayor of the cities, and reverse things to willies, it sound foul, but every girl I meet to go down, I ain't open every cell in Attica, send them to Africa. Imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be if you could be mine, we both shine?
If I rule the world,
still living for today and these last days of time.
We'll walk right up to the sun, hand in hand. We'll walk right up to the sun.
If I ruled the world, happy Monday! Morgan, are you there?
I'm here. How's your weekend?
My weekend was amazing, actually. It's really good. I just had a lot of different things that were just great. I feel good. I feel present. The sun is shining on my face outside. I feel just real grateful.
If you're not out walking with us, please, please, please grab your sneakers, lace up, hit the streets. It is never too late. Even if you've been listening to this in your office and you're just like, listen, I need a break. Just walk outside with your church shoes on, walk slow around the parking lot and get some fresh air, y'all. We need it. We need it. It's going to be a long fall. And I'm so excited to like present to you ideas and stories of people who've been here before y'all, because it's going to be required that we all stand up and step out. So my name is Morgan. If we didn't introduce ourselves, that's Vanessa. Welcome to Black History Bootcamp. We have so many people who joined this weekend. So if you were able this weekend to take action with us collectively by inviting just one friend, like your cousin, like the leader of the altos, like in the choir, like whatever.
Yeah.
Needs an excuse to be extraordinary, because she's extraordinary, but she just needs a method. I give her Black History Bootcamp. I believe in the power of stories to ignite people into their greatest promise. So,
I'm going to tell you why that's just important. So on Friday's episode, we were talking, first of all, can I just say this? Hey everyone, welcome to Black History Bootcamp Day 11. This is a lot of information, Morgan. I was feeling so overwhelmed as I started middle of yesterday, like really trying to like put the email and the conversation topics together for today, frame what was going to happen. And I was just like, it's so hard. How are we going to cover Pan-Africanism, Black nationalism, Marcus Garvey, all this stuff, 30 minutes. How I'm going to remember all the facts? How I'm going to talk about the controversy? I was just like, it's a lot in 30 minutes.
And have some girlfriend conversation and play some good music.
It's a lot.
Actually, after A. Philip Randolph, I was like, okay,
A. Philip Randolph. That's what I'm saying. I couldn't even remember who we were talking about on Friday, because we'd be talking about a lot of stuff. Thank you, A. Philip Randolph. Go ahead.
No, after A. Philip Randolph, I was feeling so fired up. I was like, how does one man unionize Black labor, desegregate the military, secure a million jobs, and then create the March on Washington and give us Martin Luther King? How does one person do that? And how am I supposed to then just get off the phone and just go make some tea? Like, no, it's on. I was like, it's on. I called Ebony, who's the producer of the show. I was like, what you doing? We need this. She was like, I'm about to start my weekend.
You know why that's important, Morgan? Because unions believed in weekends.
But anyway, if you feel like I felt, and you are getting fired up, this week is going to be so good, y'all. Oh my God, let's get started with it. It's going to be so good. But if you are feeling fired up, the one tiny act of resistance you can make, we are building a vanguard of healthy Black women all across the planet. Not y'all, there are people in all across the diaspora who are listening in with us right now. We are building a vanguard. We're at 800,000 Black women. And trust you me, we're going to need to be at a million in the next month. Believe you me. So if you have not taken the opportunity, the chance to build this movement, do it. Share whatever meme, whatever picture, whatever quote, whatever episode that you think is going to get one woman to join. One woman who needs to be out walking. Because we are resisting against the okie doke. We are resisting against the overwhelm. We are resisting against everything that comes to destroy us as a people with collective organizing, because that's what our foremothers taught us to do. So let's do that and stay ready. You ain't got to get ready. And when we need to activate, we will be ready, y'all. Get people involved. All right, Marcus Garvey. Come on. Come on, Marcus Garvey.
No, even before Marcus Garvey, Morgan, no, just to even frame this conversation, which first of all, we started today's talk with Nas and Lauryn Hill, If I Ruled the World, because that song is laying out a vision for what a world could look like without all of the kind of systems and oppressions that we've been talking about. And I wanted to start with that song, Morgan, and even in the framing of this conversation for a couple of reasons. One, on Friday when I asked the crew on the call, I was like, who should we start to cover? I really wasn't sure who I was going to talk about on Monday today, even though we have a power list. But it was an organizer in our community, Resilient Renee in Ohio. And she, lots of you hashtag Black History Bootcamp, called, text, and shared your ideas. But Resilient Renee was the one who brought Marcus Garvey to the fore. God, look how God works. I'm about to tell you a story, Morgan. It's about to be some serious testimony up in this house right now. Okay, Resilient Renee is the one who was like, let's do Marcus Garvey on Monday. I had not thought of him, even though he was on our power list of people to do. So I was like, bet he will be perfect for Monday. All weekend long, I'm studying Marcus Garvey. I'm taking notes. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. It was only this morning that late last night that I realized that August 17th, which is today, is Marcus Garvey Day in Jamaica, which is where he is from. I did not know that when Resilient Renee said we're going to cover Marcus Garvey, but I'm going to take it a step even deeper and thank our entire team, China and Ebony, who helped produce the show and the emails, Jada and Jewel, who do the communications and the marketing strategy, our field team, Rashonda, Onika, Key, Amber, who are out there bringing women and engaging them and making sure they're walking, because it was China, Morgan, who then was like, yeah, because today is Marcus Garvey's birthday. And she only told me that one. And she was like, don't worry, I got you. I put it in the email. And I'm just saying, like, I had a good weekend. And also, we're talking about Marcus Garvey on Marcus Garvey Day, on Marcus Garvey's birthday. How about that on a Monday in the middle of Black History Bootcamp?
No, I'm telling you, it's the blackest Black August ever. That really, really is. And just so that you all know, Marcus Garvey, everybody knows, it's taking us back to Africa. Vanessa's going to get us deep into it, but we're going to just dedicate this entire week to the diaspora and acts of resistance across the diaspora. Both ones you may have heard of and some you may not have heard of, but we have four more days. So if you have ideas, people have been sending them. Y'all have been sending them. And then we have the final week, which is going to be good and juicy, y'all. So hang in there. Congratulations for making it halfway through the 21-day walking challenge, which is Black History Bootcamp. Vanessa, let's hear about it.
Well, let's get into Marcus Garvey.
I was like, Vanessa, I'm so sorry I put cheetah print behind Marcus Garvey. That was so shady, but he was extra. So I was like,
Yes. And here's what you need to know. We're going to hear Marcus Garvey's in his own words at the end of today's walk. So stay tuned and picture him even in his own just bravado and the way he showed up, because he was that way. So I'm pumped to talk about Marcus Garvey today, Morgan. And yet I don't want to talk about Marcus Garvey. And we're not going to spend as much time as I thought talking about Marcus Garvey for this reason. And I'm going to tell you why. One reflection I had, and again, this was like after I'd really gotten into his work and then was meditating this morning, and it just came to me before this call. Thank God that like we just move with spirit and allow the conversation to go, because this is, I wanted to get into him meeting with the Ku Klux Klan. I wanted to get into, you know, the Black Star steamship going bankrupt and the mail fraud and J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI. And I'm going to get into that kind of a little bit just so we can set the framework. But I was like, why would we spend a whole conversation talking about Marcus Garvey, about what was, when his whole legacy could be revived if we spend some of this time, and there are a lot of people already reviving it, by the way, talking about what could be. So, and I was like, that was really our vision for these walk and talks. And I was like, maybe I could even, there's so much information to cover that we have to cover all the information and we got to talk, girl, I got to connect with you, et cetera. But I was like, this is an opportunity for me to even talk to Morgan, like, what is our vision? And for everyone who is on the call to meditate around their vision. So I'm framing it there to say, I may not get into all the facts about Marcus Garvey, Morgan, Marcus Mosiah, Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, but we're going to get into some, but we're going to, five percenters, Nation of Islam, people of Newark, New Jersey, and every Black city of America. If I don't get it all right, please, Black Power, this sign in the air, no, and forgive me. Yes, yes. So let's do a Marcus Garvey, who he was, in summary, just for everyone who, it doesn't even matter, y'all. We're getting our cardio in. These are, I ain't even going to rush this story, Morgan, because I saw several people be like, I saw y'all cheating on the 30 minutes and you trying to get those extra minutes in because, you know, Girl Trek, this is a movement where we're living. And I was like, they're right. So if this goes over, that's okay, because I have to go back and say this about organizer Resilient Renee. She did something so powerful, Morgan. This Black History Boot Camp has set a fire across the world. You know that. Folks in Ghana, shout out to our African leaders. Chet, she reached out to me. We have so many people all over the world who are doing this right now and really, really like learning about like what's happening. And I saw several educators like on Twitter especially say like, wow, even as an educator, like this information and the way it's presented is new to me. But to the power of organizing and what these calls are about, we're building a Black History Bootcamp movement. It's going to include, which is already available, like merchandise on our store and games and all sorts of amazing things that I'm sure will happen down the pipeline. But right now, Morgan, just like you said, people inviting people to the bootcamp is organizing. Resilient Renee said that she printed out every copy of the first series of Black History Bootcamp emails and put them in folder and a binder and presented them as gifts to her nieces and nephews. And I'm saying that's grassroots organizing, y'all. And in the best sense of the word, that's what I hope people do with this information. I was just like blown away by it. So I just wanted to shout out Resilient Renee and shout out the organizers who are out there and who are just in the spirit of what we are talking about, really taking action around the information. All right. So Morgan, this is Marcus Garvey. This is who Marcus Garvey was in summary for those of us who come to the call and maybe just don't know that much because this is a level set conversation. So Marcus Garvey, Morgan, he was a powerful speaker. And really the what I'm going to say is, and again, there's all sorts of people who might have a different figure or hero in mind, but I would say he's probably the most prominent figure of the Black nationalism and Pan-Africanism movements, which we'll talk about in a minute. He was the founder of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and the African Communities League. His philosophy, which many people actually refer to as its own philosophy, Garveyism, would inspire, Morgan, both the Nation of Islam and its movement and the Rastafarian movement. And I still definitely like the 5%er movement, although I was trying to Google and I, you know, they'd be secret with theirs. So, but you know, he is the modern day kind of foundation of a lot of those movements.
It sounds probably right.
That's all I'm saying. So Morgan, Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association, they represent the largest mass movement in, this is like, we are so damn dope. And by the way, J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, I don't know, I didn't get far enough to research this. If they have not issued a public apology, like, has that ever happened? Has the FBI ever been like, we're sorry for spying on your heroes, for keeping dossiers, for breaking down your movement?
This is not a rhetorical question.
You're a historian, and I'm honest to God asking in the moment of reparations. When our country is talking about real reparations.
No, they have barely opened up the COINTELPRO.
barely opened up the counterintelligence program documents. They all didactic. Fuck, I don't even know the word, but they all blacked out. No, girl, no. No.
That's on some real, though, because every personally for me, although sometimes, and it's not in a good way, I'd be like, I could be Carrie of Homeland, right? I feel like I could be sticking and moving in my black outfit around the world, bringing good to the world. But every time I see the FBI, that was a side note that is in my autistic brain. I'm sorry, you guys.
No, you are Carrie. No, I follow you.
Yes, I was like, I'm sorry, yeah. I am her. But back to what I was actually saying is, every time I see that current day that the FBI is investigating something, like, there still to me is a tinge of like, okay, but whose side are you? Like, I'm just being real, because if they could, they at least make eye contact with it. So that's a story for another day. I really haven't even thought about it to write this moment. But if we're going to talk about reparations,
well,
let's talk about real reparations.
What it touches on is every single revolution requires a truth and reconciliation, right? That you have to speak the truth about what you've done to people. It always is that way when a regime takes over, is that the people who persecuted you have to acknowledge it before you can even heal and live together. And so that's half the problem with America, is like, I think America's going to have to start. It's what Brian Stevenson is talking about. You have to acknowledge that this tree right here in your yard is where people were lynched. Or this tree right here. You know what I mean? Like, we have to kind of acknowledge what has happened to us collectively before we just keep moving forward. So, no, it's a good point.
Yeah. So Marcus Garvey, who founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association, UNIA, Morgan, it represents really one of the largest mass movements in history. And it proclaimed a Black nationalist back to Africa message. And we're going to get into this. And Garvey and the UNIA established 700 branches in 38 states by the early 1920s. Now, who is Marcus Garvey? He was the last of 11 children born to Marcus Garvey Sr. His mom's name was Sarah. His father was a stoneman, and his mother was a domestic worker and a farmer. And his father was a real proud, real Black man, and he had a great influence over Garvey, and who once did describe him, though, as, you know, severe, firm, but determined and bold. And it just shows you, like, his father, like the role that Black fathers play. So, Morgan, at the age of 14, Marcus Garvey became a printer's apprentice. And he traveled to Kingston, Jamaica from St. Anna's, which is where he is. Yes, I was going to say, because, you know, Jamaica's going to be like, come correct, all the way correct. He became involved
worst idea ever. Morgan and Vanessa go to scout sites for my wedding in Jamaica. It's the worst idea ever, because there's so many Black people in Jamaica. If you are engaged, do not go scout.
With your two single girlfriends?
Don't do it. I'm going to tell y'all, but go ahead.
Okay, but we have fun. Okay, so Morgan, but it was in Kingston, Jamaica, where he had traveled to become an apprentice, which is where he actually became engaged and involved with union activities. And he took part in a printer's strike, which became like really catapulted his thinking around like political activism. 3 years after that, and he was only like 17 or 18 at the time, he traveled throughout Central America working as a newspaper editor and a writer, and he was writing about the exploitation of migrant workers in plantations. He then traveled to London. Yes, exactly. He then traveled to London, where he attended Birkbeck College, which then a part of the University of London, and he worked for the African Times and the Orient Review, which advocated for Pan-African nationalism. But Morgan, you know how it rolls. It was really when he got to America, and it was really when he started touring, like, he toured on the urban cities, he toured the rural South, and of course, he spent the most a significant amount of his time in Harlem. And it was there that he started to really put together this vision around how when Black people in America and Black people capital B in the Caribbean and Black people capital B throughout Central America and Black people throughout the South America and Black people wherever on the continent, when we start to unite as one, and he meant culturally, he meant from an economic standpoint, he meant from a worldview standpoint, he went from a political organizing standpoint, we would be, and I'm going to use the word not ruthless, which came pop top of mind, but I don't want to use a colonizer's word. We would be
unstoppable.
We would be unstoppable, Morgan. It was there.
You know what's so powerful is, yeah, you know, WB Du Bois is there, is, for those of you who are new, I'm in Ghana, West Africa, and WB Du Bois is buried here. And on the same exact corner of land is the Marcus Garvey Center for Pan-Africanism, and it's a hostel for people who want to come and live affordably while they are studying African culture. It's so dope. And W.E.B. Du Bois' body is interred there. It's just such a powerful little block of land.
Yeah. I even believe I read that it was Marcus Garvey's Black Star Shipping Company that inspired, correct me if I'm wrong, that inspired the Black Star that is in the center of the Ghanaian flag. Or vice versa.
It was all around the same time.
Exactly. Yes.
Well,
and
the black,
I do know that
the Black Star is everywhere here, you know. Like the Black Star.
Yeah, and I do know that Ghana's first president was like an evangelist. Yes, he was an evangelist of Marcus Garvey. So I'm So Morgan.
Yeah,
Marcus
and
Garvey,
Malcolm X's dad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So the Universal Negro Movement Association
for doing Garveyite moves. You guys remember the movie when his dad was killed by the Klan on the railroad tracks? It was for his
actions. I didn't remember that, Morgan.
Yeah. You remember his mom was like getting questioned and his father was out. He got killed because he was a Garveyite, Malcolm X's dad. So it's such an important movement. Yeah,
it is. So Morgan, the mission of the Universal Negro Improvement Association was bold, and it literally centered him right in the crosshairs of the FBI, of Lyndon Johnson, and of the powers that understood what the impact of his vision would be. His vision, he said, was to seek to emancipate the Negro everywhere, industrially, educationally, politically, and religiously. He said it also seeks a free and redeemed Africa. It has a great struggle ahead. He said it has a gigantic task to face. But he said, nevertheless, as a representative of the Negro people of the world, and he was like the 400 million thousand of us in our race, that we can free ourselves, collectively organize, come together for the benefits of motherland and Africa. That's a vision, Morgan. That is a powerful vision from Marcus Mosiah Garvey from St. Anne's, Jamaica. And he organized flawlessly around that vision. And he was controversial. And there were some people who said part of the controversy in his downfall, by the way, was even his own ego and his own inability. Some people accused that he didn't center even Africans themselves enough in the conversation around his vision of what Africa was. But I was like, but he had a bold vision. It had holes, but he had a bold vision. He had a bold vision. And we cannot tear down our people because their visions were holes. We have to fill in the holes and stand in the gap.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to be, this work is so hard because
it is so
hard. It's hard to be passionate enough to be able to get momentum, but then also not arrogant or egotistical in your in your pursuit of liberation of our people. It's just you can thread that needle and take like this kind of middle path. That's really difficult. Really, I mean, I was joking. A. Philip Randolph says, "Sam, Marcus Garvey," and I was just like, "Why are we fighting, y'all? Like, come on!" But I'm saying they were both so tenacious about what they wanted. And Marcus Garvey had a little flair. That's all I'm saying. He was just doing parades, you know, in Harlem. Sometimes you need a parade, too. That's all I'm saying.
No, Morgan, for the record, and let's go on record as saying this, from the corner boys whose pants are sagging to the B-boys who started the hip-hop era and who were breakdancing in the middle of the street with Kangols to Jay-Z and Diddy, swag, arrogance, bravado is resistance for the Black man. Like, it is actual resistance for the Black man. And even back to your brilliant assessment of, by the way, Emmett Till and how he showed up as a young boy from Chicago in the South. And there were people who just could not tolerate that. So now when we look at our historical analysis of what happened, we have to ask how much of that analysis even is steeped in like what Marcus Garvey would say is colonialism and colonial thinking around how you define me.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because he wore all of the colonial. Kind of, and it reminds me of what people are saying about Beyonce in her latest like music video thing, is that she was wearing kind of like some colonial clothes when she was talking about Black liberation. But part of this also is co-opting icons of power. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you think, if Africans around the world see those gold ropes on your shoulder as icons of power because the police have oppressed those or whatever, and you all of a sudden just gonna put them on and ride in a carriage down Harlem, like in, down 125th Street, I'm saying there is something that is resistance about kind of that iconography. But I think it's interesting, at least. I see the argument on the other side, but I think it's interesting, at least.
Yeah, I do too. So there's two events, Morgan, that we have to talk about as it relates to Marcus Garvey. The first is this. The League of Nations met in 1919, and this was post-World War I. So they met and formed to promote the principles of collective security and preserving world peace, like after this world, like we have to get together. And it's like all of the world's superpowers, but they excluded, Morgan, representation from the African continent. So all of the world's superpowers and this League of Nations, but they excluded representation from the African continent. But Marcus Garvey, along with the first Black woman millionaire, Madam C.J. Walker, along with Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Sr., organized.
Come through.
Look, the League of Darker People. I'm sorry, but yes, we should organize over here.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So they organized the League of Darker People. And they sent, though, because this is power move strategy right there, though, they sent a representative, though. Oh, you ain't gonna, no. Shout out to my friend Y King in Seattle. He is one of the most powerful organizers I know. And something about, as I was, my childhood friend, my brother, and his father, Omari, and they have been soldiers on the streets for so long, Morgan, radical soldiers. And when I was studying Marcus Garvey, so much of what I know about Marcus Garvey kind of orients me from Omari and Y King. So like my whole legacy of organizing in Seattle, I'm so proud of it. And I just wanted to shout him out. But Morgan, so
no, I love
bold,
Y King.
Look, coming through,
But that's to introduce me to Joaquin. I was very, very privileged. And he sat across the table and sized me up for a good 10 minutes to make sure I wasn't no undercover agent.
No pump. Like, right.
He was like, listen.
We're pro toe, counter pro tail.
He was like, listen. Yeah, but go ahead.
But Morgan, but it was a power strategy move. So yes, they were excluded. But they were like, but we're still going to bust in the door whether you have put a seat for us there, even while we are organizing the League of Darker Peoples. So they actually sent a Haitian representative, and his name was, and I'm sure going to pronounce it wrong, Elisha Cadet was, I believe, his name, but he was a Haitian man. And he went there still to represent the African interest and to represent
this is
the
what
African
interest. I was going to say,
yes.
I was gonna interrupt when you were saying it because I don't know what year you're talking about. This happened. Never heard of this before.
1919, yes.
Oh, exactly. Most African nations were still colonized. So the French,
Morgan,
the Portuguese, they weren't even leading themselves. I mean, I was shocked that Ghana just got its liberation 60 years ago. I laugh all the time when I get frustrated with the lights or the sewer system, whatever. I was like, but my dad is older than Ghana.
Right.
As a nation state. You understand what I mean? Like in the 60s, in the 50s, in the 40s, sometimes. But mostly, Burkina Faso, which we'll talk a little bit more about next week or later this week, wasn't until like the 70s, sometimes even the 80s, or South Africa, for example, which was the 80s that it got liberated. So in 1919, there weren't African leaders that were official states, but Haiti, I'm saying, Haiti wasn't colonized before a minute. They was like, no, this ain't gonna happen.
Right.
Like,
no,
you know,
exactly.
Here, this ain't gonna happen.
Exactly.
So I'm glad they sent Haiti. Yeah, let's go.
Yes, and so this was 1919, Morgan. And so Elisha Cadet, he went there and he said, look, we are seeking the surrender of the African colonies that were seized from after Germany's defeat in the war. And that we want to repatriate Africans from all over the world back to these places so that we can, in the same interest that he saw other groups doing, you know, Jewish groups doing, Asian people doing, he said all over the world, Indians, he saw all people organizing. He was like, why can't Africans organize collectively? But Morgan, they refused to hear him because they said he did not represent a nation. So that was in 1919. But do not worry, folks. Do not worry. The vision is still alive. Marcus Mosea Garvey Morgan.
We gotta do the Haitian Revolution because they didn't even recognize Haiti because Haiti was in debt because they had to pay back their enslavers. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. That ain't gonna happen. That's illegitimate.
Exactly.
Name. That ain't gonna happen.
Exactly. So Morgan, Marcus Garvey and the UNIA in Harlem, Morgan, and just to set the scene. The First World War, 2 million African people of African descent, African American, West Indians from all over the diaspora volunteered and sacrificed their life in that world and then returned to places that were hostile to them. So they had started to protest and say, we are not going to be fighting in these wars and not and coming back to these hostile places. So that was the environment. There was also in Britain, so there was upheaval against Britain and that was happening at the time that you could see all over the world. It had happened with the Irish Rebellion. It was happening with the Russian Revolution. So all of these things were happening like between like 1915 and 1920, where all over the world, people were just starting to wake up to like the colonizing forces, right? And then that League of Nations met. And then in 1920, Marcus Garvey, who had toured the United States, who had really started to understand like the opportunity. And by the way, Morgan, this is so powerful. He was only 33 years old. And his wife, I think, was like 23 years old. I'm saying like, these were young people, like young people, right? Like just, we have carried so much on our shoulders. So Marcus Garvey Morgan, he organized and Lord, Black people, we know how to do it up. It wasn't just a 2-day convention, Morgan. It wasn't just a 3-day convention. It wasn't just no week-long convention. They was up in Harlem for like 30 days for the very first convening of the UNIA, where more than 2,000, Morgan, where more than 2,000 people from 22 delegations gathered there. They gathered there. Morgan, that's some serious, they was like, some of them probably quit their jobs. Some of them probably was like bumped this week. Like people made sacrifices. And at the end of that convention, Marcus Garvey laid out a vision for the Declaration of the Rights of the Negro People. Now there are two important things in the email that I sent out today. The Declaration for the Rights of Negro People, which everybody needs to read because Marcus Garvey had a vision, and even if the vision was flawed, they was declaring some real stuff up in there. And also, Morgan, I put in there, which was so powerful, that this August 1st, in the middle of a global pandemic, the UNIA still met for their 100th anniversary, and it was a virtual event. And when I tell you that sometimes I do believe that, like, God is aligning us with a purpose that said we were busy, we were disconnected, and that in this time where we are forced to stay at home and do less, that it's a time for us to connect. There's no possible way that I would have been able to attend or even know about the UNIA 100th convention wherever it was going to be held in this world. But it was for 2 hours, and I put the whole link in the email, and they had the president of Ghana, they had the former prime minister of Jamaica, they have some scholars there from the Caribbean universities, and the convention is so amazing, and it was like, because not only did he have a vision, but the vision is alive and well. And the vision for some folks might be the academic vision, by the way, that happened with that convening this August of the UNIA convention. But the vision is also alive well in Afrobeats and Burna Boy and Beyonce and Blackest King and the way we are showing up like apologetically Black and hashtag Black as fuck. Like those, Marcus Garvey was the pioneer of that.
So good.
Yeah, he was the pioneer of that. So all that
I'm taking
Morgan,
it in. It's so good. Yeah,
it
yeah.
is. It's good. And no, I was taking it in too. And I was actually a little bit just reflecting for myself. I have no answers here, by the way. So this is a real meditation, and it's going to be a real challenge to myself and everyone on the call for sure. I was like, I have snippets. And by the way, I'm putting this two and two together right this absolute very second. Thank God for therapy and life coaches and doing the work on yourself. Look, I'm putting this together.
Marcus Garvey had a vision for the world, and also we need a vision for ourselves. And I have that. I've been working with my life coach, Lori. And like, look, she's on me. We're like 9 months into this game, and she's like, you still do not have a vision for your life, young woman. Like, you still don't have like a vision. It's not committed to pen. You're not meditating on it every day. You're not looking at it. You're not expanding it. You're not challenging it. And if you don't have a vision for your life, then how can you even GPS navigate yourself directions to where you want to go? And so Marcus Garvey, his vision, I was like,
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I think we should take the next couple of days to really talk about it, because I haven't even talked to you today. You don't even know who I'm doing on Wednesday or who I'm doing on tomorrow and who I'm doing on Thursday. But this exact conversation is where I wanted to go to. It's around like, what is the agenda for Black liberation, and how do we lean into it in a very intentional and collective way? But part of having an agenda for Black America is, do you have an agenda for your life and how you want to feel every day, how you want to produce every day, how you want to create every day? You have to have that, because we are not cogs in a wheel in somebody's liberation campaign. That's where we always fall.
And Morgan, I'm going to do a quick call out our liberation.
Hold on. When we make our lifestyle our liberation, like that's actually it. It has to be lifestyle politics. It really does. It's why we're asking women to walk every day, because if you can just take time, like away from the labor that you're giving to other people, to pour into yourself, like that to me feels like a lifestyle protest. And so I think we have to do both. And Vanessa, we have to collectively organize, but we have to turn inside. What we're going to say?
I totally agree. No, that's exactly what I was saying, is that I totally agree. And I was like, that is one of the things that my life coach was telling me. And I was like, as I was doing this Marcus Garvey work, I only had the framework of like, what was my vision collectively for us, right? But I was like, but you're just lacking, Vanessa. And what I was saying when you were talking, I was like, and it was a call out to me, and it's a call out to other folks. One of the things I reflected on in my own life, and we just got to pray the devil away and work the devil away, block the devil away, and call him on the phone or her on the phone sometimes and tell them off. But I was like, oftentimes in my own life, Morgan, the biggest naysayer, the biggest detractor, the biggest people who be like, that can't happen, this ain't this, be the people who don't got the vision for their own life, trying to tell me that,
that's
well, your vision is too much. And that's the same thing that goes for, I think, collective organizing. When you look at the Twitter trolls, or you look at the people who really push that kind of like come for me, call things, it'd be the people who don't got a vision who sometimes be the loudest people. And meanwhile, the people who have a vision are the people who just are steadfast and ardent against their, is ardent a real word, girl? I was like, the best.
Sure,
thing.
Sure. No, it sounds
ardent
great.
Ardent against their
it
goal.
It sounds great.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
I mean, what it reminds me of, I used to teach in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is an old industrial city that is now just wrecked economically, as well as Black and brown kids in these schools. And we started a school there. And one of the, I won't say his name, but there's a little boy who I used to teach there who was from Jamaica. And he was here with his mom, and his dad was still in Jamaica. And his dad was fighting the good fight in Jamaica, right? And all Garveyite and stuff. He used to send all these Black magazines and stuff. But when I tell you, this little boy was so bad, Vanessa, he was so bad because he was so angry inside, because he was reading all this kind of propaganda stuff. Some of his teachers was white, you know, he couldn't handle it. He couldn't process it. He was in the fifth grade and his dad wasn't there. And part of what it used to make me really, really infuriated, his mom was struggling with him. It used to make me infuriated because I don't care about your political organizing. I don't care about your liberation theology. Come raise your son. Like, and so part of this, like what I'm talking about around your life needs to be your message. Your life needs to be your journey. Right. And then you can envision what you want for your own life, and then you can scale that up for every Black person across the planet. That's when you create an agenda. And so that's why I'm going to ask myself, I don't walk way far away from my apartment while you're talking, when I walk back. And I encourage anybody who's listening today, who's out walking, to really meditate on that question. What do you want for your life? And then how can you will that, hope that, pray for that for every single person you come in contact with? And what does that collective agenda for organizing look like? And how do we practice abundance but also practice conservation? How can we ball out and have collective economics? I was mad. I was at a restaurant this weekend, and it was just like a regular restaurant here, but people in Ghana be balling out. Every single car was either a Porsche SUV or a Land Rover, what do you call it, a Range Rover. Those
right.
are like $80,000 cars. It only costs $2,000 to get a college degree here. So you could have sent 40 people to college, or you could buy the SUV.
Yeah.
It's like, what? And they're everywhere. There is such a strong, like, wealth class here. And I was just like, how is everybody affording these Range Rovers? Like, I don't understand.
Do you think some of them could be doing both? Or, I mean, I know there's many people doing both, being philanthropic and balling out, though, right?
I mean, I don't know. My personal opinion is one $80,000 Range Rover is one $80,000 Range Rover too many. But
right.
That's my own personal opinion. I understand that people like luxury in life, and I'm not. I guess I am.
No, I love this because I'm considering buying myself a Mercedes G-Wagon, Morgan, and I don't got even the money for it, y'all. I was like trying to do my credit karma score.
No, I know you.
But I was like, but I might be moving
like,
in the direction of a G-Wagon. I'm just saying, as a nonprofit leader, I was like, I also want a flex in my short little black
yeah,
girl
I
life.
Know. Everybody wants a flex, and there's extreme poverty. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's just extreme poverty everywhere. So it's the same balance we've been talking about, Vanessa. How do you set boundaries in your life? How do you then,
yeah.
what do you say yes to? What do you say no to? I'm reading a book with a book club now. I'm so excited about around boundaries. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what the answers
mm-hmm.
are. But actually, I think if we can ask ourselves, what do you want in your life? And how can you secure that for as many people as possible? I think it's a powerful
yeah.
question to ask. And then in the next
yeah.
couple of days, let's look at some models, some blueprints of people who, what they were proposing and how they were going about doing it. Because there's a lot of
yeah.
people across the Pan-Africanist movement who had big ideas for this.
Yeah. I love that, Morgan. And I think that's a good place to end today's conversation so that we can make some space for Marcus Garvey and his own words at the convention to come through the conversation so that he can close us out. And we will be back tomorrow, y'all, with another live episode of Black History Bootcamp.
Bye, y'all.
Hello, citizens of Africa. I greet you in the name of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League of the World. You may ask, what organization is that? It is for me to inform you that the Universal Negro Improvement Association is an organization that seeks to unite into one solid body the 400 million Negroes of the world, to link up the 15 million Negroes of the United States of America with the 20 million Negroes of the West Indies, the 40 million Negroes of South and Central America with the 280 million Negroes of Africa for the purpose of bettering our industrial, commercial, educational, social and political conditions. As you are aware, the world in which we live today is divided into separate race groups and distinct nationalities. Each race and each nationality is endeavoring to work out its own destiny to the exclusion of other races and other nationalities. We hear the cry of England for the Englishman, of France for the Frenchman, of Germany for the German, of Ireland for the Irish, of Palestine for the Jews, of Japan for the Japanese, of China for the Chinese. We of the Universal Negro Improvement Association are raising the cry of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. There are 400 million Africans in the world who have Negro blood coursing through their veins, and we believe that the time has come to unite these 400 million people for the one common purpose of bettering their conditions. The great problem of the Negro for the last 500 years has been that of disunity. No one or no organization ever succeeded in uniting the Negro race. But within the last 4 years, the Universal Negro Improvement Association has worked wonders in bringing together in one fold 4 million organized Negroes who are scattered in all parts of the world, being in the 48 states of the American Union, all the West Indian Islands, and the countries of South and Central America and Africa. These 4 million people are working to convert the rest of the 400 million scattered all over the world. And it is for this purpose that we are asking you to join our ranks and to do the best you can to help us to bring about an emancipated race. If anything praiseworthy is to be done, it must be done through unity. And it is for that reason that the Universal Negro Movement Association calls upon every Negro in the United States to rally to its standards. We want to unite the Negro race in this country. We want every Negro to work for one common object, that of building a nation of his own on the great continent of Africa. That all Negroes all over the world are working for the establishment of a government in Africa means that it will be realized in another few years. We want the moral and financial support of every Negro to make the dream a possibility. Already, this organization has established itself in Nigeria, West Africa, and is endeavoring to do all possible to develop that Negro country to become a great industrial and commercial commonwealth. Pioneers have been sent by this organization to Nigeria, and they are now laying the foundations upon which the 400 million Negroes of the world will build. If you believe that the Negro has a soul, if you believe that the Negro is a man, if you believe the Negro was endowed with the senses commonly given to other men by the Creator, then you must acknowledge that what other men have done, Negroes can do. We want to build up cities, nations, governments, industries of our own in Africa, so that we'll be able to have a chance to rise from the lowest to the highest positions in the African Commonwealth.